parties. Daddy's making mama's a million mouth cards, and mom is making dad watch a movie about boats. And we're on vacation, yeah!
Well, hello there.
Welcome to He Saw, She Saw.
If you're just joining us, I am Corey.
And I am Keith.
And we love movies.
Just not the same ones.
So we make each other watch a movie that we love.
But the other has no interest in seeing, has never seen, and would never see unless we were doing a podcast.
And we talk about it.
So happy birthday, Corey.
Happy birthday. It's our birthday.
It's our birthday episode.
Ooh.
So depending on when this is dropping, it's either dropping on my birthday or Corey's birthday. So
yeah.
What movie are we going to talk about today, Corey?
We get to watch for my birthday. I know we just watched a Goldie Hawn movie,
mm-hmm.
but as I've said before, I do not care. We are going to watch my favorite movie of all time. I know I said that Mannequin is my favorite movie mm-hmm. of all time, but I feel like it's kind of like when you have more than one child, like you're uh-huh. supposed to, I don't know, because I only have one, mm-hmm. but you're supposed to love that child, or mm-hmm. you do love that child the same,
okay,
like different, but as much or whatever. Uh-huh. Anyway, we're going to watch Overboard. With Miss Goldie mm-hmm. Hawn and Mr. Kurt Russell.
Yeah. What would you say, because they're both your favorites, how do you like Overboard different than how you like Mannequin?
That's a good question. There's a plethora of reasons. Overboard taught me about caviar.
What?
So to give you kind of just like a little backstory.
Mm-hmm.
So there is this place called Lowe's.
Mm-hmm.
In Coronado.
Okay.
And it is a, it's the Lowe's Coronado Bay Resort.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of it. Yeah, yeah. Garth Brooks sang a song about it. Said he had friends in Lowe's places. It was a really big hit. I can't believe you haven't heard it.
Okay. I totally walked into that dad joke.
Da-dum-tsh.
Wow.
I knew if I went hardware store, you would totally like cut me off. Yes, so I yeah. thought I would just go ahead and.
I was actually waiting for you to say the something about hardware store. It's not a hardware store. It's Lowe's Bay Resort in Coronado, which is like Ritchie area.
Is it down by the Oasis or is it?
No, it's not.
Okay.
So anyway.
I'm sorry. Is it by the Oasis? Cause I got friends.
No, it's not.
All right.
But thank you. That was mm-hmm. great. Lowe's Coronado Bay Resort
uh-huh.
has a Sunday champagne brunch.
Well, it had, because I know you've waxed poetic about this. And
I have. I've been on a soapbox.
And you researched it and like, no, you're like, no, we're not going. So,
well, it was astronomical when I used to go, and mm-hmm. I would only go like once a year because it was so expensive.
Oh, yeah.
But it was insane. It was like, they literally had like a roast pig.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't know if okay. they used the roast pig, but it was like decoration, like roast pig, I swear.
Okay.
They had like, crab legs
okay.
bar. They mm-hmm. have a omelet bar, a pancake station and waffle station. Like, I didn't care about those.
Okay.
But they have everything.
That would be breakfast, but okay, keep going.
I don't like those things.
Okay.
And they had like just the champagne was just flowing
mm-hmm.
and they had a caviar bar.
Ew, okay.
And they had all different kinds of caviar.
Uh-huh.
And those things, those round things that are like the little round, it's like the size of a half dollar.
I have no idea what you're talking. No.
Blintzes? No, because
caviar you eat with a blini.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking
about.
But
it's like it's bigger than that. It's like.
Oh, no. These were like a half dollar size. Like the pancake, right?
Yeah, well, it's like a crepe.
The only pancake I will eat.
Oh my god! Yeah, no, it's like I don't know, because again, I bought when I lived in Russia, I only had caviar once. That was more than enough. And they at least my host family served it with basically crepes, but it was delicious. It was even better than normal crepes.
Huh.
Caviar was horrid.
Right.
But
you don't like stuff
they had like black and red, and I think one or two other types too. And I tried them. I mean, because I tried them all. I'm in another country, and
yeah.
I have no idea how
you
much
gotta
cost.
Do it.
And oh my! But I housed that blini. I mean, I just like progressively less caviar eggs
and
more blini.
Well, this caviar bar had it. Uh-huh. I remember it had a wasabi one. It had
okay.
like all just like different kinds. Okay. And
well, maybe if I had the wasabi, I'd throw up, and so I would not notice the caviar.
Calm down.
All right.
It was delicious.
Okay.
But the thing is that Goldie Hawn taught me about caviar. And I'm not going to tell you, like, the scene right now. Mm-hmm. But I will say that when I tasted caviar for the first time, mm-hmm. I said out loud, oh, my God, Goldie Hawn is right.
Really?
Because it's like a briny Pop Rocks in your mouth.
Or it's like an eyeball-sized fish zit that pops with all the worst part of fish taste.
Who hurt you?
Going through. Oh, caviar did. Oh, my God. Are you killing me? Kidding me?
Are you killing me?
That was my a good gosh. Slip. Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry. So anyway, long story short.
You just wanted to talk about caviar.
I love caviar.
I still have no idea.
Well, because it's like, you have to, if it's there, you have to try it. It's like when I was in France and there was escargot, I was like, well, I have to try it. I'm here. It's there. Yeah. I got to try it. When I was in England and they made me a fish pie, it had bones and eyeballs, but I tried a bite.
Oh my gosh.
It was terrible.
Yeah. All right.
Anyway.
You're really selling this movie for me.
No. So anyway, there's many, many, many reasons why I love this movie. And a lot of the things, I know I said I quote Crybaby a lot, but I quote this movie all the time. That's what you get to watch.
Okay.
I am not excited whatsoever, but it's your birthday, so I'm going to give you a pass. And we're going to try to reattempt to watch
Death Proof. Ugh. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So that's
it. I'm not looking forward to.
So I've only seen it twice. I've seen it once in the theater when it was with Planet Terror. So originally it was a double feature put together, Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino. It just kind of a love letter to 70s action movies and just the craziness of that. Mm-hmm. And I liked it. And I tried to have you watch it. It was very early on in our relationship. And, you know, I was still very, I am always going to be a dumb guy, but I was more of a dumb guy. And I was like, oh, it's a cool movie. She'll like it. And, so.
Well, there were extenuating circumstances.
Yeah. So Corey had a surgery. And so even though we'd only been dating for a few months, I was a good boyfriend and took her to the hospital and waited in the waiting room. And
to see my uterus.
Yeah.
Picture of it.
Didn't know that was, didn't know that was going
to
happen that day.
You get to see my uterus before I got to
see it. So I check her in. They're like, okay, here's the waiting area for the families. I'm like, oh, okay. So I'm just waiting there. And then a doctor walks up to me an hour or two later. And I was like, oh, Corey. And I'm like, yeah, yeah. And so he's like, okay. So he just flips open this file folder of like five pages of Corey's uterus from different angles from an endoscope. I was like, oh, okay. And I'm just like, I couldn't tell from down. And it's like, yeah, so this thing and this thing and da, 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 da.
Well, you must've liked it because you married it.
There you go. You know, I got to check the engine evidently. So, so we took her home afterwards. It was an outpatient procedure, thankfully. Mm-hmm. And, you were kind of in and out a little bit. And I was like, all right. So I had just bought Death Proof as a single, not as with Planet Terror. I have the full version. It's like, oh, this is a great chance to watch this movie. So I pop it in and Corey basically starts throwing up. So
I was like, turn it off. This movie is making me physically ill.
But I'm pretty sure it was the surgery, though. Pretty sure it was the surgery.
I was having a bad reaction.
Yeah, we found out you can have Vicodin.
No, so that was Vicodin makes me sick.
Yeah.
So. But Death Proof makes me sicker.
We do not know that.
I was like laying on the floor, sweating. We have not
scientifically proven this yet. So
turn it off. I don't even want to hear it.
So I turned it off and made sure she was safe in her bed. And then I went back downstairs and watched some Death Proof.
So anyway, and happy now, birthday.
Happy birthday to you too, Corey.
Thanks.
I apologize for making you watch Death Proof, but it's such a good movie. I can't wait to watch it.
It's okay. Cause I'm going to, maybe get some more Vicodin.
Oh, no, no, you can't.
Hey, I just have to say.
Don't go overboard, all right?
Okay. Give my regards to Schwartzman and Heimlichen.
That doesn't make any sense. All right, let's talk about Overboard. Is it a classic movie or a bunch of buoy? Let's find out through this.
God.
What?
What was that?
Why did that? It's a dad joke.
Oh, that reminds me of like when you eat at a seafood restaurant or you go to a seafood like dive bar and it says gulls and buoys.
There you go.
On the bathroom doors.
There you go.
All right. That's funny, I guess.
Okay. Not really, but all right.
No, I like it when it says that.
Okay. So how did it hold up? Did you still love the movie?
Oh my gosh. I love the movie. It holds all the way up. It's like a buoyed yacht. I realize that, you know, the movie probably didn't age that well, and there are some things that are very problematic, but I am willing to overlook it.
The whole purpose of the movie is to watch Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn fall in love with each other. Mm-hmm. Like, that is the, which to this day, even with Queer Christmas Chronicles, when she has that 3-minute, you know, cameo at the very end of that movie, spoiler,
first one,
there is a twinkle in Kurt's eye when she walks in the room. That is just like that. That's the twinkle you want. If you got that, you got something good.
Well, and you should know because we've seen that movie about 500 times, not during the Christmas season.
Yes.
And that's not because of me.
No. That is one of the many obsessions of our daughter, which, could be a lot worse.
Christmas movies all year long.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to give me a pitch for this movie?
Sure. I would say something like, a frustrated carpenter gets revenge on the snobby socialite who snubs him when she loses her memory falling overboard.
That, got overboard in the pitch.
And avoids all the problematic things that we will now talk about. It opens in Oregon.
Yes.
It's never quite explained why rich people are in Oregon, but there is. There's a very expensive yacht.
Oh, because his yacht is, he needs to get it fixed.
So there is a very expensive yacht docked in Elk.
The Immaculata.
Is it Elk Cove?
Elk Grove. No, Elk Cove.
So we open on this marina.
Marina is a loose term.
Yeah, it's somewhere
like
between marina and, yeah, dock is a good way to put it. So there's this big yacht, and we see Kurt Russell in his rustic glory with a truck that's way too old to be running, even back in the 80s, go with a whole bunch of tools onto this yacht because he's been called in for an emergency. So when he gets there, he's shot at because the man of the boat has a gun.
Mr. Staten.
Mr. Staten.
He's shooting Skeet.
And
he's shooting Skeet.
And he's there. I'm here for the emergency. And he's like, oh, that's my wife's department. And he comments on the gun. He's like, oh, yes, it's very expensive.
I have a lot of them.
And behold, there is Goldie Hawn, who is just kind of like, it's kind of like the character from Private Benjamin. If she went to the dark side, like totally embraced just being a snobby rich person. And so she's incredibly snobby. Mm-hmm. And we also meet the butler / valet played by Roddy McDowall.
Andrew.
Amazing in this movie.
I love him.
And her big emergency is she needs a closet to be built.
Yes, she needs to redesign.
So she walks into the closet and she's basically like, don't you see? Obviously, this must be done because this is an absolute travesty. He builds a nice, you know, pretty decent custom closet, you know, based off of what she wanted. It's very
got a, like a little twist.
And it's inventive. Mm-hmm. And so we established early on that he doesn't look like much, but he's very inventive and hardworking and industrious. And so he's done. He shows it off and it's even better than what she thought. And she's like, oh, my God, what is that made of? It's like, oh, well, oak. And she's like, ah, it should have been made out of cedar.
All closets are made of cedar.
Basically, what's happening is Kurt's not going to get his money. And so he's getting more and more angry because she wants it redone completely, made out of cedar.
At his cost.
At his cost. And cedar, what Kurt says, is it's double the price. And so he just needs his money. He wants to leave. Just, look, I need my $650. So he gets by the rail, essentially, and so she pushes him overboard. She throws his tools and just like,
you
oh my
God. So upset. I'm not the tools.
I'm not even a tool guy. I'm like, oh my God, that's his livelihood. Yes. Those are always way expensive.
Yep.
So he's angry, but there's nothing he can do. The yacht's moved on. We kind of go back and establish that not only is he a bit rustic, but he's got four boys who are just terrors.
Unsupervised, unwashed.
About, yeah, ages probably like 6 to 10. We established they're the Lost Boys from Peter Pan.
Yes.
Cut back to the yacht. And so, and again, I'm going to spoil this whole thing. So if you don't want to know, you need to stop right now and watch
it. Do yourself a favor and watch this.
not quite if I'd say a favorite. Goldie Hawn is just kind of being impossible, and her husband is no prize.
Well, they're both incredibly selfish.
Yeah. And so she has forgotten her wedding ring on the top deck. And so she, of course, tries to get him to do it. And he's like, I'm not, you know, he's in his pajamas and he's watching Robin Leach's Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. So he's not going up. And so Goldie's like, fine, I'll get it. So she goes up to get it.
In her high heels.
And so she's up there. And as the boat is going, as you know, as it does, when you're outside of a bay and in any sort of open waters, boats move.
Well, and the guy who is doing the steering wheel is asleep and he's steering with his feet.
Yeah. So it's a real professional operation. And so accidentally she gets tossed overboard in the dead of night. Next morning, Kurt Russell is playing bowling with his best friend who is played, you know, he's an affable, it's kind of like
Billy Pratt.
Yeah. Billy Pratt. He's
I don't know if they're like cousins.
They never quite established a relationship.
They're close friends for a while. Yeah.
He's kind of like, what if Norm didn't have a desk job and did construction is kind of how I can explain his best friend Norm from Cheers.
Yeah.
And he's just like, he's screwed. He's like, man, I need more hours. And he's like, well, you know, I'll see what I can do. You know, if we can get this miniature golf course off the ground, which will become a key part of this movie. But till then, hey, I'll see what I can do. So
he lives in a trailer, by the way, like one that has wheels.
Yeah. Yeah. His best friend does. Kurt Russell lives in a house that's Hubble. I'm telling you, it's an Oregon house. I haven't been up to Oregon much, but it's what you would expect. Rural Oregon house. He's at the bowling alley, just hanging out. And as he's hanging out
I think he was fixing something at the bowling alley.
Oh, he might've been. I mean, he did bowl a little bit, but
yeah, well, they're always bowling, but yeah.
So as he's wheezing some chips from the, people who work at the bowling alley, he looks and sees the newscast that, oh my gosh, a lady has fallen overboard who does not remember a thing. And evidently either the fall or the shock of the cold water has caused her to forget her memory. So not her personality, but her memory. So she's still very snobby and demanding. She just can't remember who she is.
She's being awful to everyone.
She's being so bad to everyone. And so they're like, please God, if you know her,
please pick her up.
So Kurt Russell sees this and his wheels start turning. And her husband, of course, the next morning had woken up. He saw the news report. So he goes to pick her up. But he's being kind of trepidacious. And she's going full Joanna
here. She's my full mommy dearest.
And so it's just, and so he's like kind of, it's like kind of that two-way glass thing. So he kind of looked over, saw her and saw her being horrible. And the sheriff is like, hey, we'll pick, ready to pick her up. And he's like, oh no, I've never seen that woman in my whole life. And he takes off. So Kurt Russell shows up to pick up Joanna. And I forgot to mention the sheriff is played by Ray Combs, who is a comedian and former game show host. He does a really good job in it. So anyway.
Yeah, he's funny.
So yay,
so
Ray.
Funny.
Yay, Ray Combs. So
yay, Ray Combs.
So Kurt is willing to pick her up and Joanna, or as he calls her Annie, cannot remember him to save her life. But the doctor and Ray Combs and everybody is like, you know, it's like, we really want to give you to her.
Well, and they've even put her, they removed her from regular population of hospital and put her in the psych ward because she's just so out of control mean.
Yeah. And so Kurt says, well, I didn't want to say anything, but she does have basically a strawberry birthmark on small of her back left butt cheek, which she had seen. He had seen because she was always wearing a swimsuit and would just kind of
G-string bathing suit,
saunter around and just dare him to look and be so offended if he would. And Goldie doesn't remember. And she looks and she gets upset and Ray Combs and the doctor high five themselves. So
because they're like, She's like, I don't know him. And they're like, but he seems to like you and he's a nice guy.
Yeah.
Oh, terrible.
So she is brought home to just this
horrendous house. And how does he bring her home?
Horrendous house. In the back of the
pickup truck, of
his horrible pickup truck. Not even in the cab.
Because his dogs are in the cab with him.
Yeah. So.
Which my favorite line, I just ate a bug. Well, you got to keep your mouth closed.
Kurt has told his kids, and we should establish at this point, his wife, unfortunately, had died a few years before. So these boys have been running rapid for, 2 or 3 years without a mom. And so the boys know they're supposed to act like she's mom.
And they went and got her dresses.
And they were supposed to get her dresses, and they get her just horrible dresses.
You didn't say size. You just said get dresses.
And so he's like, yeah, well, you do all the work around here. I do all the work, and I'm the bacon. So, you know, and so she has no domestic skills, no parenting skills. And it feels like something, it feels like this is all wrong, but she's just, on the other hand, she was just like,
she doesn't remember.
Yes, she doesn't remember. From Kurt Russell's perspective, the boy's perspective, it's going great because they have someone to pull planks on and, you know, who's going to clean up for them. After some indeterminate amount of time, the boys get in trouble. They're in trouble at school and they're feeling sick. And so the boys tell the principal, hey, you know,
we don't feel good.
We don't feel good. And the principal's like, you know, no, you guys are horrible kids and yada, yada. So they call mom. So they called.
Because they've refused to take the Schwartzman and Heimlichan placement test.
Yeah, partially because they feel so bad. So Goldie Hawn shows up and she kind of listens to what's happening. And she's like, okay, but, you know, these tests are, she basically says, well, these tests are bull crap. You know, I realize they're trouble. I have trouble with them at home, you know, but I'm doing my best.
The kids, yeah.
And so as the principal is kind of huffing around a little bit, she looks over and she notices her kids have played in poison oak. So she goes from being just like, kind of like an apologetic, like, yeah, I know I'm doing my best. We're trying to figure this out, mm-hmm. to full Karen on the principal. And basically, how dare you? You aren't taking care of my kids who are obviously clearly infested with poison oak and them. And that test is crap. And so I'm out of here. So give my results to whatever the test guys
say. Give my regards to Schwartzman and Heimlich.
The kids kind of thought she was a fun punching bag before, but now the kids are like, wow. And they even mentioned, it's like, oh, dad never did that. Dad never stood up for us like that. And the boys are falling in love with this mom figure. And so as kind of time moves on, Annie gets acclimated. The house isn't a great house, but it's so much cleaner than it was. And she's one of the boys can't read, and so she's helping him to read, and she's getting the boys under control. And yeah, so she's gone full on domestic goddess here. Mm-hmm. In the midst of all this, we do have some scenes which cuts to her actual husband. We see him with different Hollywood starlet kind of wannabes, like on his boat. There's always on the boat. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he clearly is stooping at least one or two of them. And he just loves the fact that he doesn't have to be married to Joanna anymore. So there's kind of this dream of Kurt Russell is to open up a miniature golf with his best friend. And so they're just have horrible guy ideas. And so she's like, well, what about like wonders of the world? Mm-hmm. What about like you have the Taj Mahal and you have this and you have that and the other thing.
Pyramids.
And Kurt Russell's character, Dean, is like, that's awesome. She goes in and she starts designing the images. So in the midst of this, Kurt and Goldie Hawn are falling in love. Miniature golf is a great idea. He pitches the idea in what could loosely be considered a business meeting if you've never been to a business meeting, like a crab shack or something. Yeah. There's no PowerPoint at that point.
Well, I was thinking, oh, this is like before PowerPoint, because he has these poster boards with these designs that she drew with Mr. Sketch markers.
So at this point, Kurt realizes, okay, this is kind of going too far. He's really falling for her, and mm-hmm. she's so helpful, and she's totally turning.
They make a good team.
Yeah, they make a good team. She's turned it like a shack into an actual home. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, okay, I gotta tell her. Mm-hmm. He tries to tell her. He's gonna explain, and then he chickens out. He's like, we forgot to celebrate your birthday. So he takes her out, and they consummate the relationship.
And he tells her about the legend of Arturo and Caterina.
He does. So he tells about this story about why a boat honks three times on its way in. It's mm-hmm. for this love story of star-crossed lovers.
Who drown.
But when you see water splash, it's them making whoopee. So the next scene is them making whoopee. At this point, we've also realized the jig is up for Grant. So
because her mom, like, you give me my daughter. Catherine Hellman plays her mom.
And so if you don't produce her, I'm coming after.
I'm coming down there.
He's like, all right, fine. So he goes down. But what's happening is we're having the opening of the miniature golf. And so before this, something else happens, which is too complicated for me to get into right now. But basically the jig is up. Mm-hmm. And so Kurt tries to explain to Goldie Hawn that, look, I lied to you. Mm-hmm. You're not my wife. These aren't your kids. Mm-hmm. And she just
won't believe him.
The kids totally ditch Kurt Russell and say, no, she's mom.
And they say, we're keeping her, dad.
Yeah. And the best friend totally lies to make everything. And so Kurt's like, what are you doing? He's like, she's perfect for you.
Yeah. I'm saving your ass, man.
Yeah. So we have the opening
of the golf course.
It's a rousing success. We go back to the house, and there is Grant
in the limo with
Dr. Corman, a psychologist, and a guy who's supposed to be really into, I mean, I guess he's a kind Olaf. Of a big fat guy. Yeah, a guy named Olaf.
He was one of the ship crew that he just brought along because he was big.
So Kurt Russell immediately knows the jig is up, but Goldie Hawn just gets out of the truck and walks by and says, oh, hi, Grant, and walks up the door.
I'll be right back.
And everybody like pauses, and then Goldie Hawn's like, oh, everything immediately comes back, just like the doctors told her they would. And so she's somewhat angry, but not really angry at Kurt Russell.
Well, at first she's just like in wonder of like how she remembered, oh, I'm this person and this is my mother. I have money. Oh my God. And then she's like, you brought me here? Why did you do that?
Yeah. So she's kind of upset, but not like, oh, by the way, you've just gaslighted me and really performed a degree of rape to me. So, you know, forced me into being a slave. So she's not that upset, but she's like, what? She's just really confused.
First, she's just really confused.
And Kurt is just like, he's just can't say a thing.
Nope.
And so he says, for what it's worth, thanks, which is really okay. Anyway, to be a guy in
I'm sorry.
Yeah. To be a guy in the '80s, I guess. Right. So she goes back to her lap of luxury life on this yacht. It's very clear that she has definitely changed after having been taking care of the boys and taking care of Kurt Russell's character. And so she's much nicer to the crew.
Mm-hmm. She hangs out with them.
And Grant and her mom are just beside themselves because she is like, she is just so uncouth. Like she picks up a tray to say, hey, do you guys want any?
I love Dr. Corman. He's just like sitting there and he's just like.
No, Dr. Corman is totally underrated. He's so funny.
Made you want to get up and get the tray? Oh, because I thought everyone was hungry. And he's like, oh, interesting. And they're like, why is that interesting? He's like, well, I was hungry.
Yeah. So he's there just to pick he's there to make us laugh and to pick up a paycheck. Goldie Hawn is just a different person at this point, and she doesn't want to be the person she was before. We also find out that Kurt and the boys are just beside themselves. They're like, we got to go get her. Yeah. And Kurt's like, look, we can't. She doesn't want us, and she's left. And so as they're heading back to LA, Goldie Hawn basically takes over the boat to turn it around to start coming back. Mm-hmm. At the same time, Kurt Russell has talked to his best friend, who knows someone at the Coast Guard, and they're on their way. And the captain of the Coast Guard is not a fan of this. And he's like, he talks to one of his subordinates. That's like, this got to be illegal, right? And he's like, well, this guy's looking at the reg book.
Yeah.
He's like, no, I don't think it's illegal to drive up alongside a boat to say you love someone.
I love that kid that's the subordinate.
I was not shocked to find out he hasn't done anything else, but in that role.
He's so funny.
I think he was
probably a local.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Oh, totally.
But like, he was so funny.
I have no idea that I could not find that story. I would love to know that story and how that guy got cast because he's not good, but he's perfect for that role.
But he's absolutely like, he is probably a Coast Guard and he is a local and he's perfect.
So we have this scene where, of course, there's horns three times, and we, of course, have
the story of Katarina.
And so they both just jump out because that's what you do. And they swim towards each other, just like the myth. And so they're going to fall in love and be happily ever after the end. When it came to things that I liked about the movie, mm-hmm. I mean, the whole purpose of the movie is to watch Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn be in love with each other. Mm-hmm. And so it does a great job at that. I hadn't seen the original Overboard, but was forced to watch the remake.
You like Anna Faris.
With Anna Faris
and Eugenio
Derbez.
He's hilarious.
Anyway.
Hang on one sec. Have you seen How to Be a Latin Lover?
No, I haven't.
Okay, we're watching it for this podcast. Oh, no. Sorry. Move on.
Oh, jeez. Anyway. So that last scene is like worth it. Like, and they try to remake the scene. Mm-hmm. in the remake, and it's not as funny. But it's just the straight out comedy, and Roddy McDowall has some funny parts.
Oh, yeah.
This Coast Guard guy is clueless, it is literally one of the most ridiculous scenes in cinema. And I think unless you've seen the whole movie, it's not as funny. Again, I'm noticing a theme in the movies that Corey is having me watch. And like, on one hand, one of the hands I thought it was funny, where it was like as soon as we started watching it, I was like, oh, I didn't realize amnesia was such a problem for ladies in the 80s.
Oh.
So it's with Manny.
How did we ever function?
Desperately Seeking Susan and this and Kind of Private Benjamin.
Oh my God, I didn't even realize that.
And I realized it really says to me, and again, used to review movies but don't have a film degree. It tells me how cloistered and how the role of women was changing at the time, because women had to let go of their past lives to enter into the one that they really wanted, or their true ones. And so
they couldn't really
notice
without knocking their head.
Yeah. Well, not always. Like Private Benjamin, she just does it. Yeah. But, you know, I noticed that's a big theme of these movies of that Corey likes. And I totally get, well, it makes sense. Like, it's not Kramer versus Kramer, you know, it's not, but it's clearly, as a culture, it just lets us know like how the women's movement is so young in this country, you know, that it wasn't until the 80s that it was really trickling down. And movies like this, and many of these movies that were so popular in the 80s, are about women going, oh, not in a rebellious, right, controversial way, like this in Kramer versus Kramer. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh crap, how do we do this?
I know she'll hit her head.
And it's so ridiculous, they have to hit their head. So, yeah, so I thought that was
also sad that a woman had to hit her head and get amnesia to like change her life.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
so
my gosh,
they
I'm
had
so
to
press now. Thanks.
Yeah, it just shows how women had to reimagine their lives, and they had to in a way that was outside of the construct of their culture at the time. So there was a couple issues I had with the movie.
Gee, what are those?
Yeah. So, I mean, I kind of tiptoed around it, but just literally, if it was made with anyone else except for Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn, it is incredibly problematic. A man who gaslights a woman into submission to him and his family to do slave labor.
And treats her like a slave.
And creates Stockholm syndrome so she has sex with him. Uh-huh. Like, that is...
Oh, God. That's like a true crime.
Yeah, this is like when...
Story.
This is like when people deconstruct Beauty and the Beast. You know, it's like, oh, this is way worse than I think it appears. But because it's got a pretty package, it makes
it's
sense.
Okay.
So I was interested when I was doing a little bit of research on this afterwards. I research after. So I just go into the movie like, okay, let's see what this is.
Going blind.
So Leslie Dixon takes huge offense at that characterization. And she's like, oh, no one ever thought he was being horrible to her. So she's wrong. It's just, you know, she claimed that like no one thinks he's gaslighting or da da da.
Is she
like,
the one that wrote it?
She's the one who wrote it.
Oh, okay.
And it's like, I understand why she doesn't think so, because the point of the movie.
Right.
Is we don't care what happens as long as Goldie Hawn
and Kurt Russell
fall in love. Mm-hmm. But it's incredibly problematic. Mm-hmm. The other thing, just from a writing standpoint.
Well, and also, can I just say one thing?
Sure.
As I was watching it, I was like, gosh, he is really setting a terrible example for his young men.
Yeah. And to be honest,
yikes.
To their credit, the boys rebel against it, which was good to see. And so they saw her as much more integral and as a person at first than he did. Mm-hmm. So the other thing, just from a writing perspective, and again, clearly it's a movie that's been remade once in America and like three or four other times in other countries. It's a good idea for the story. What I felt like it was missing something to humanize Goldie Hawn in the beginning, like, cause her personality doesn't change. Mm-hmm. So I wish there had been some at least hint of gilded cage for her at the beginning.
Or like a reason why.
Like we have a scene about how like she is complaining to her mom and she says, Grant wants a baby again. And like, what do you think? And she's a little kind of, I don't know if it was just there and it wasn't just a strong choice, but the mom is like, well, you can't do that because if you have a baby, then you're not the baby. And Goldie Hawn's like, oh, you're right. So I wish there had been a moment of.
But at the end, she says, I want a little girl.
Yeah, but I wanted that before. Mm. Like, it doesn't make sense.
Like, it's a kind of an afterthought almost.
Well, the character at the beginning would never do anything for the boys or Kurt Russell, even if she was told to. Mm-hmm. It was very clear, it's ingrained, that she's a complete princess. I wish there had been something about her complaining about, like, wanting to do something. Mm-hmm. Like, something we should do this. I want to build something.
Instead of buying million-dollar paintings.
And she could be, and she could still be horrible to Kurt Russell's character. Uh-huh. But that sort of, you know.
Sets it up a little better.
And again, I realize when you have movie stars at the level of Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell, sometimes those things just kind of fall by the cracks. Well, I'm actually going to give a rating for it. I've never given any other movie yet. So this is what I would say. So I started definitely double thumbs down. Uh-huh. I would definitely say that there are huge issues with the movie, and so it's definitely a thumbs down. But my other hand, I would say, is a thumbs up. And it wasn't until the last scene to me that turned it from a thumb in the middle to a thumb up. Because there are things to love about this movie and there are things to hate about this movie. And I'm not going to argue with you either way. Like, however you want to look at this movie, if you want to focus on the problematic parts, I totally get it. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's not a movie I have to watch all the time. Mm-hmm. But if it's like, yeah, no, it's Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn. No people were harmed in the making of this movie. Then yeah, it's funny. And like I said, that you got to watch the whole movie, but that whole movie to the final scene was just hilarious. So yeah, so that's my rating for Overboard.
Well, I know now that it wasn't the Vicodin that was making me sick. I have confirmed. But Keith, how did this movie hold up for you?
Oh, this is the best movie ever. No, it's not. I wish that we could have found the original version that I saw. So we watched the full movie of it.
Mm-hmm. We watched the whole enchilada.
Oh, yeah. Every single
whole nacho plate.
Every single nacho chip. So I wish we could have found the version that I saw, which was like just an hour and.
Which Keith was frantically looking for while I was waiting to watch it.
Yeah. So I think this movie showed me how much I've grown as a person over the past.
That's valuable.
Decade and change since I've last seen this movie. Yeah, there were still things I really liked about it, but yeah, I think it could have been tighter. You know, a lot tighter.
I do have a confession to make to you.
Okay.
So I know that, like, Quentin Tarantino, when I was in late high school, he was like a really big deal. And, you know, I was like, yeah, I like Quentin Tarantino. I like Pulp Fiction. But if I'm being honest, I just fast forwarded to the parts where John Travolta just get to Sam Jackson and Uma Thurman. And
a lot of what made Quentin so amazing at the time is now just common practice today.
Well, pioneer.
Yeah, so he kicked the doors open, which
I do appreciate that. I have learned from being a theater major and being required to see performances and then making a critical evaluation of, you know, many things, the performance and the design aspects and all that. I've learned that it is okay not to like something. You just have to understand and be able to explain why.
Yeah, I'm a little disappointed I used my Quentin Tarantino bullet here with this particular movie. Having re-seen Death Proof now, I'm a much bigger fan of Pulp Fiction and True Romance and Reservoir Dogs.
So my pitch for this movie is a deranged stuntman stalks women and murders them with his stunt car. That's only Death Proof for him.
Nice.
That's my pitch for this movie.
That is fair.
I just kind of want to talk about my initial thoughts before I go into the plot.
Okay.
Because there's not much to the plot. I don't know why this movie was 2 hours long. It could have been 20 minutes.
A little longer than 20 minutes, but okay.
I don't know about that. Mm-hmm. So my first thoughts last night after we watched it and I was laying in bed trying to sleep. I was like, wow, this is really like exploitive of women, like disguised as like women's empowerment. And I was like, but that can't be it. There's got to be something there. And so, you know, I knew that it was a grindhouse movie, and I vaguely knew what that was. So this morning I decided to kind of go into it, because whenever something is that blaring, it's got to be for a reason. And mm-hmm. So, yes, it was fashioned after the grindhouse movies, which, if you don't know, back as early as the 1920s, grindhouse movie houses were, it was poor quality films that they just showed over and over and over again in quick succession. And it was kind of for like people who couldn't afford to go to like a night at the movies and be glamorous and everything. And so those films kind of were in more of the exploitation, you know, kind of pushing the envelope, flasher, you know.
Kind of based on people's basest desires.
Right. Yeah. And so violence. So that this movie really does, and I knew at the beginning, I was like, okay, they've got a lot of jump cuts going here. It looks like it's like damaged a little bit. He did it in a way that it wasn't super annoying. It kind of like, it was a lot in the beginning, and then I don't know if I got used to it or it went away for a little bit, and then it kind of comes back in other parts. So it's not overpowering. I feel like it's placed in, it's not the whole time.
Afterwards I did a little bit of research, and I read a couple articles that was talking about how the first half of the movie is kind of like Quentin Tarantino doing a grindhouse movie in the 70s. Like if it was the 70s, what would have his film look like? And then the second half is him as if he was revisiting.
Oh,
that.
Is that way it goes black and white at one point and then goes back to color?
It's essentially, once you get to color, it's like, this is Tarantino saying like, this is how I would do it today.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. And I did read an article about how he said he really wanted to make a slasher movie, but apparently the format for that is so strict that if you screw that up, you get in real big trouble. So he made a exploitation slasher slash, such thing as a muscle car movie. Did you know that?
Makes sense to me. But yeah, I did not know that.
I know the exact point of the movie where I probably got sick the first time I watched it.
I thought so too. So
what did you think it was?
No, I think, well, you want to start at the beginning of the movie?
Yeah, and then when we get to
then
it.
Then I think, yeah.
Yeah, there's a part where I know, like, I was feeling sick last night. So. All right. So basically the plot of this movie is, we are in Austin, Texas. There is a radio DJ played by Sidney Poitier Jr. So I'm going to call her Junior from now on. It's his daughter.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The radio DJ.
She usually uses her middle name too, but okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm going to call her Junior.
Okay.
She and her two friends are going to go bar hopping in their hot pants and flip flops, but not after a very long stretch of unnecessary dialogue.
Yeah.
Exposition.
Where we learn kind of the impetus of this night out is she has a friend of hers who's visiting her. And
they call her Butterfly. Yeah. I'm just calling her B-Fly, actually.
All right.
So that's what I wrote down in my notes. I almost made all my notes just one color in protest, but lots of dialogue, lots and lots of exposition, lots and lots of Quentin Tarantino thinks this is how women think and what they say. So their first stop is Oedos, which is a bar / Mexican food place. Junior tells Butterfly, because she's a radio DJ, and we know this because there's like 19 billboards with her in different positions with her shoes off. Someone's got a foot fetish, is what I think. Or unless that's just kind of the, maybe that's the trope, I don't know. So she tells Butterfly that, hey, I told everybody on the air this morning that, you know, we're going to go out, and if they see us, that they should come up to you and they're going to buy you a drink and they're going to recite this poem to you, which is Stopping in the Woods on a Snowy Evening is what it's called. And I know that you probably know the actual words.
The woods are lovely, dark and deep, but I have promises to keep and miles to go before I sleep. Do you hear me, Butterfly? And miles to go before I sleep. Is that too creepy?
Yeah.
Okay. So, and if you like them, then hey.
You can give them a lap dance.
There you go. Because you're classy.
Because you're a classy lady. They go to Warren's, which is, I don't know if it's called Warren's, but it's Warren's Bar. And Warren is played by Mr.
Tarantino.
So they go to the bar to drink, smoke, dance to the jukebox. and more unnecessary dialogue. So we see Stuntman Mike. He's sitting at the bar and he's eating.
Well, it's not clear at first because we get the close up of him eating nachos. Just, oh yeah. And that's the part where I was like, yeah, I was like, I think that's where you lost it the first time. So
he's just like, he's just hoovering them.
And it's just a real tight, and it's nachos.
Like
so
wet mouth noises. And
it's getting all over his hands. And he's
hands
looking at, yeah, just.
Yeah, in my notes I wrote barf. Mm-hmm. So that is the part where I'm pretty sure I got
I'm pretty sure, yeah, because it was really early on.
And I'm going to fast forward a little bit because it just, this goes on forever.
Yeah.
But basically, Rose McGowan is in it. Mm-hmm. She's wearing a strange, I don't know if it's a wig or she ruined her hair. She just looks like a weirdo. Mm-hmm. But she needs a ride home and later. And so I keep wanting to say Magic Mike, but it's not.
No, it's definitely not.
So Stuntman Mike says, hey, I'll give you a ride home. And you know, they're talking.
If you're ready to go when I'm ready to go.
Then
but I'm not going to leave now. Yeah.
Also, we established that he doesn't drink a drop and he orders virgin drinks.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, and Rose McGowan's like, why would you do that? Well, conversation. And
a lot of,
he's going to say sure for what's going to happen later. So the other thing, which I had a question about, which I don't need an answer, but I did notice that Junior, she keeps texting this person. I'm guessing it's like a guy she wants to see something. And that never comes back.
No.
Ever. So. No. And then Butterfly is outside. She notices that their creepy car that she saw earlier is now parked out in the parking lot.
The car is a character. It's definitely a character in the movie.
And she's just very creeped out by it every time she sees it.
Mm-hmm.
And so later on in the night, not Magic Mike, Stuntman Mike hands the girls some Shiner Bock. And they're like, oh. And then he recites the poem. Mm-hmm.
Butterfly.
He's just very creepy and just, I didn't like it. Didn't like it. It was yucky. And so then she's just like, oh, I don't wanna. And Junior's kind of like, she already did it. And then like Kurt Russell's just kind of like, is he negging her? He's negging her, right?
Gets her angry and.
So she's like, fine, I'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
So then we get a lap dance.
The original Grindhouse, they just go from, you better get ready for your lap dance. And then they cut.
So they don't do the lap dance.
So they don't do the lap dance, which, yeah, I mean, she can dance, but it's not that
I'm.
You
can dance if you want to.
Yeah.
You can leave your friends behind.
Yeah. They probably should have left this behind. Because it's like one of the, when they don't show the lap dance.
You're like, oh, I wonder what it was like.
Yeah, I think it was sexier than like seeing, because I mean, she can dance. I'm not a connoisseur of lap dances.
It just made me remember the time that, it was my friend Bobby's birthday and we took him to a college bar and there, I don't know how it happened, but there was this girl and she really just wanted to give him a lap dance, but she was not his type.
Oh, wow.
And so I think I have pictures of him just kind of like holding his hands while she's trying, she had all her clothes on, like she full on like long sleeves and pants and everything, but he was not into it.
So it was a present for all of you, not for him.
It was a present for me, definitely. Happy birthday, Bobby. Wow. So it's time to go. And Rose McGowan's like, oh, I'm going to go home with them. Or not going home with them. I'm not going to sleep with them. So she goes with him in his car. And then the girls go in their car.
Mm-hmm.
And he shows her his car, which is a stunt car. It's got a roll cage in it. And then it's got like this box, this like police cars have. And immediately as she's getting in, like a stupid sheep to the slaughter, I'm like, oh, what are you doing? What are you doing?
Yeah.
And he's like explaining it to her.
Yeah. He's explaining how like the car is death proof because they've established that he's not only a stuntman, but he's like a quote unquote real stuntman. Mm-hmm. Like back before CGI.
Mm-hmm.
Is they would tear out the insides of the cars to make them quote unquote death proof so the driver could actually survive these horrendous crashes they would go through.
Mm-hmm. So they're in there and immediately we flip the switch to Psycho Creep because he's like, are you going right or are you going left? And she goes, oh, I'm going right. And he's like, oh, well, we're going left and you can start freaking out right now, basically. Mm-hmm. And I was like, great. And so then proceeds to drive like an a-hole and she keeps smacking her head around because we learn this car is only death proof for the driver.
Mm-hmm.
And so then he basically slams on his brakes and smashes her face into the
Dash.
Dashboard and blood everywhere, and that was great. I was like, oh, good. And explain my face when that happened.
I don't know if there's a term for it.
The girls are driving in their car, and they're, you know, listening to music and not really paying attention, but he's got his lights off, and he makes it so that he basically does a head-on collision with them at 200 miles an hour. He has his mm-hmm. lights off. And so it's funny because it's not funny, but Junior had her leg kind of like outside the door of the car. And I turned to you and I said, oh, is her leg going to come off?
And I was quiet.
So Junior's leg gets ripped out and lands on the ground. Shanna, which was the redheaded girl, goes flying through the windshield and flies. And then poor, poor Butterfly, she gets a tire sandwich right to the face.
Yeah, it's I don't know how they
so gruesome.
Yeah, so they made a big deal afterwards. So like, you know, because they're talking about how like there's no CGI. I don't know how they got the girls' death scenes, but kind of the death proof car hits it flat on, and then basically uses the car as a ramp.
Yeah. So then we cut to the hospital. The sheriff's like talking to, I guess, his son, and he's like, you know, oh yeah, he probably did it on purpose, but he didn't have a drop of alcohol. So since there's not a drop of alcohol, then we can't charge him. And I was like, what? So we're at 14 months later. We're in Lebanon, Tennessee. Stuntman Mike is sitting in a brand new muscle car. Next to him at the Circle A parking lot where he is parked is another muscle car. And it belongs to a stunt driver lady who is in town filming a movie with her buds, a makeup artist played by Rosario Dawson. And then there is a starlet in the car as well, played by Mary Elizabeth Winstead. And I didn't really recognize her, but
oh, she's Ramona Flowers from Scott Pilgrim. But anyway, never mind. Okay, have you seen Scott Pilgrim?
No.
Yes, I cannot wait to watch Scott Pilgrim. Okay, move on.
And the stunt woman is played by Tracy Toms, which she was in Rent. So they're in town filming a movie, and so Rosario Dawson is laying in the back seat with a sleeping mask on and her feet out the window because someone has a foot fetish. Tracy Toms decides she's going to go into the Circle A and get a huge cup of coffee because they got to go to the airport and pick somebody up. Stuntman Mike gets his keys, throws them in the street next to the car, walks up to Ardaz, touches her foot, and she jumps. And so then he walks up to her foot, and I guess like it's his mouth near it.
Licks a finger and then kind of traces a little bit of the foot.
Don't want to. Let's move on. So as he does that, he acts like he bumped her when he goes to get his keys and she wakes up. He gets in his car and he speeds away like a jackass and then goes down the street. And she's just kind of like, okay, weird. So then they go to the airport. And we know this because we can see them through Stuntman Mike's camera lens because he is now stalking them and taking pictures of them at the airport. They stop off at this breakfast place and so much more unnecessary dialogue. And he's there at the breakfast place. He's sitting at the counter. We don't make a big deal out of it, but he's there listening. And at that time, we learn a couple of things. We learn that stunt woman Tracy Toms is packing heat. Zoe, is their friend that they get at the airport. She's from New Zealand and she's also a stunt woman. It's played by Zoe Bell. She's basically playing herself. So she wants to test drive a 1970 Dodge Challenger, just like in the 1970s muscle car movie, Vanishing Point. So we go to the place to test drive the car. Zoe wants to do this very dangerous, stupid trick called a ship's mast. And they argue about it. And then they're like, yeah, we need to talk this guy into letting us take the car out by ourselves so we can do this stunt. And Ardaz wants to go too. And they're like, no, you can't go because we're going to do this scary thing and we don't want you to be screaming about it. So I'll talk him into it. And they're like, well, how are you going to talk him into it? Well, I'll just leave Lee with him and tell him that she's a porn star. This is an example of a man trying to write dialogue for women. I know guys ditch their friends all the time and it's funny, but I don't know that us women would leave one of ours behind with a creepy man who is also racist because he says something racist and insinuate or say out loud that she is a porn star.
Which is interesting now that I think about it. The first set of girls do the same thing with Rose McGowan's character now that I think about it.
Oh, yeah, they do.
Yeah.
Ugh. Talk the guy into it. They take the car. They do this stunt. And so this stunt is basically they take belts and they attach them to the windows of the car so that they're like handles. And Zoe Bell has to get out of the car, climb up onto the hood, grab the belts, and then they go faster. And it's, woo, I'm flying. I'm the king of the world. And stuntman Mike catches up to them. And he's coming up behind them. And he crashes into them.
I love that part of the movie. Very well. Because Zoe Bell is in such peril, like already just doing the dumb stunt. And then you just see from a distance, you see stuntman Mike. And I'm just like, oh, man.
He gets out of the car and he's like, ha, ha, that was fun. And then remember I said stunt woman Tracy Toms has a gun. So she shoots him in the arm and he gets in his car and he escapes and runs away. And they're sitting in the car and Zoe's not on the hood anymore. And we're just like, oh, wow. And then it was a moment of like, my favorite part of this whole movie is we're quiet scene. For a second. And all of a sudden, Miss Zoe pops up over the brush and goes, I'm fine.
Yeah, but she's so short. Like she jumps up to say, I'm short, up. And then falls back down.
So that was like, whew. Okay, so she's fine. We're fine.
Which reminded me of another blonde, very charismatic, funny actress I know who improvs all the time. But yes, thank you for never doing stunt square. I appreciate
me.
That.
Oh, yes. God, no. No. Then
they're like, let's kill him.
Let's go get him. So Zoe grabs a pipe, which just happens to be there. They get in the car and then another car chase and more crashing and more car chasing and unnecessarily long and stunt. They finally T-bone him, I guess, or I don't know what it's called. It's a crash. And he's like laying there and his arms all busted up and he's just like wailing and crying, which I mean, yeah, I would too. They walk on over and they start beating him to death. Mm-hmm. And then Ardaz does the final blow. Is that a drop kick? Is that what that is?
Oh, God, no. No, it's not a drop kick. But she does, I think it might be called a crescent kick. I can't remember. Or a guillotine kick. Because literally you lift your leg up to your face.
And then you drop it.
And then you drop it. So it goes from 12 to 6. It's face. An insane amount of force. Especially because she's wearing cowboy boots. So it's like, yeah, you would never do that.
So that's...
Unless you were trying to kill someone.
Yeah, they kill him. And that's the movie.
That's Death Proof.
That's Death Proof.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and you survived, showing that you're death proof. Oof. So,
only for the driver. I do have some quotes that I would like to read to you, if that's okay.
I may. All right, this is new. Okay.
So Roger Ebert says that this movie was marred by overlong scenes of exposition dialogue.
It's kind of wordy.
Pete Bradshaw of The Guardian is quoted as saying, it's padded with long, long, long stretches of bizarrely inconsequential conversation, which Pete, you and I get it. I see you. My favorite quote, however, is from Quentin Tarantino himself. And I know that I'm probably taking it out of context, but he said basically, this is the worst movie I ever made.
Okay. If that's the one I'm thinking about, yeah, that's from a director's roundtable where he was basically, he was at a director's roundtable. He can't hide it. It's my worst movie, but hey, it's not that bad for being a worst movie when you can look at other directors. So
he said that. Just want you to, he's quoted as saying that. He also said that for the theatrical version, that for Death Proof, he cut it down to the bone, quote unquote, and he took out all the fat. And I was like, well, if that's really true, if you really trim the fat, I feel like this movie would only be 20 minutes long.
See, the problem is I think we would cut different parts of it because the action is insane.
So the things that I didn't quite gel with, if you would like me to put it that way. I'm trying to be positive, trying to keep it positive.
I appreciate that.
So the type of woman that is in this movie, and I feel like it's the type of woman that's kind of in Tarantino movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're hot, they're foul mouthed, they don't care. They're, you know, they're a little slutty and they're like the guys' girls.
Yeah, it's not as slutty as much as like sex positive. Like that's something that both Tarantino and Kevin Smith did, which I think was really one of the reasons that they were so popular and transformative is they kind of allowed women to play by men's rules.
Yeah, but so did Bridesmaids.
You know, I never thought of that. I never thought, but yeah, that is true.
That's why I'm here,
very
to help you.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
Anyway, back to this movie. Okay, so... Wish I was watching Bridesmaids right now. Wish I was watching someone go to the street in a wedding dress. Yeah, I love that movie. I wish we could do that movie, but we both liked it.
Just hold on for one more day.
I know there's pain. This movie is pain. The other thing is Tarantino, you know, writing dialogue for women. And, you know, the whole ditching Lee thing, no.
Yeah, that's just not.
The other thing, and I don't really need to go too far into it. I just noticed it. I wanted to say something about it, and I don't know how I feel about it. But just Tarantino writing, I'm going to say, interesting dialogue for a woman of color.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of N-bombs.
There are some white guys who think they can get away with that. And like 99% of the time, they are totally wrong.
Yeah. But, yeah. I mean, I'm white, so yeah. I don't really have any. I have no. Yeah. I'm just going to say.
Yeah, I would defer as well.
The other thing that I just didn't. How they all just kind of decided they're going to go murder this guy in broad daylight.
I would not want to be their lawyer because I'm pretty sure they've gone beyond like manslaughter into first degree murder because they had time to cool down.
Just like the decision to just like, I mean, okay, it's a slasher movie, right? So that's like them killing Jason, right? So I don't know. I just kept thinking like, this was a Stephen King movie, it would make more sense. But then I was like, okay, well, I guess that's what he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically Quentin Tarantino trying to make a Stephen King slasher movie.
So here are some things that I recognize.
Can't even get to like, but that's okay. I support that. Okay.
I recognize that this was a very suspenseful movie.
Yeah.
It made my stomach hurt. I don't know. You saw my face a different.
Well, we didn't have to. We weren't throwing up in the bathroom this time. So it was a step up.
So I know you saw my face throughout this movie. Like, what did you see?
A lot of wait, what? And why am I watching this? And like horror from how gross it is and horror of like, really, this was made? And so
that just happened. Yeah.
There were many faces of horror here.
So I realized that it didn't give me warm fuzzies. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like when I watched Punch Drunk Love. I don't like that movie because it made me feel crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was like an impressionist painting where it makes you feel. This is the same effect. It got me to react. Not in a positive way, but it got me to react. And that's why we make art. The thing was that Kurt Russell was extremely unsettlingly creepy before he went full on psycho.
So when you look at the people that could have played that role, I'm glad Kurt Russell got it because he's got this great combination of good acting, physical presence. It's like he could be a crazy stuntman. Mm-hmm. So,
well, and I looked at that list and one of the interesting ones I thought would have been like Willem Dafoe because he can get crazy.
Yeah. I don't buy him as a stuntman off the top of my head, but you know, but
creepy,
but creepy, yeah. Crazy. Yeah.
And the other one that confounded me really was Cal Penn.
I saw that. I should have clicked the footnote on that Wikipedia page because Tarantino also tends to write for the actors he casts too. Uh-huh. So he's a few of his characters.
Been a stoner movie too?
I don't know.
Neil Patrick Harris would have showed up.
Probably on a unicorn.
I love Cal Penn, but like,
yeah,
not for this movie.
Would have had to write it different.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely does the job that it was supposed to do. It is what it is. One thumb has to be down because it's just not a movie that I would like. However, I do recognize that it did the job that it was supposed to do.
It's and very much a Grindhouse type movie.
It was entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of spectacle. It did make me react.
Mm-hmm.
You know, violently ill is a reaction. So I do have another thumb that is down, yet it is toggling up towards the middle because I do recognize that and not necessarily appreciate it, but can recognize that.
I think that's a fair assessment. I mean, okay.
I don't want you to like feel like you made a mistake and that was bad. It was entertaining and it was an experience.
I need to sell my Death Proof and Planet Terror and I need to go buy the Blu-ray so we can get the tight version.
We don't need to do
tight
that.
Version.
I think I get it.
Really?
I think I got it. Happy birthday, Keith.
Happy birthday.
This was your birthday present.
Wow. This was actually a surprising episode to me.
Was it?
Yeah, it was the first time I suggested a movie and was like, oh, dear God, what did I do? So, I mean, like, there's a few scenes in the movie which are totally indelible to me. I love it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was, hopefully we can watch True Romance at some point or Pulp Fiction.
I liked Pulp Fiction.
There you go.
But just to, you know, give me a couple months to a year.
Maybe some therapy, maybe some.
And then I'll be able to tackle that again.
What are we going to watch next week?
Oh, next week's going to be a treat.
Oh, really?
Yes. We are going to be watching a movie called Three Women.
Oof.
That has Shelley Duvall, Sissy Spacek, and I don't know. I don't remember who the third woman is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just this. Shelley Duvall just fascinates me in this movie. Her character is just fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why it's one of those movies I watched on a Sunday afternoon on the Weird Movie Channel.
I think it's a stream of consciousness movie.
It was based off of Robert Altman's dream that he had.
Oh, wow.
So it's just super, just weird. It's weird. It's like an acid trip. But my favorite part is definitely Shelley Duvall's character.
All right.
So what do I get to watch?
Well, I'm trying to hit another memento here. I'm hoping to go. So there's a movie that I loved the first time I saw it. Saw it on right after it came out on DVD, and I loved it. It was crazy. It was the movie to me that cemented that Marky Mark can act. Like, he doesn't have a huge range.
I'm sorry. Did you not see Fear?
I did. That was we both loved that movie. Yes. That was a great movie. I was bummed we can't watch it for this.
It's a good movie.
But it was when he starred in David O. Russell's Three Kings, mm-hmm. along with George Clooney and Ice Cube. So you said Three Women. I was like, okay, this is my chance to see Three Kings again.
I've never seen it.
Yeah, it's all the things you were interested in. It's a guy movie.
It's like war movie, right?
About the Persian Gulf War. A lot of sand in this movie. So
unless it's in someone's butt crack, I don't want to see it.
Wow.
Did you not see In the Army Now with Pauly Shore? And Andy.
I think I repressed that movie on purpose.
And David Alan Greer?
Wow.
Well, we got to watch that.
Oh, dear God.
Oh, idea.
Okay.
Light bulb. So anyway, that's what we're doing next week. Happy birthday to us.
Yeah. And if you like these episodes, please let your friends know. And
yes, that will be your birthday present to us.
Tweet us.
We would really like for you to like, if you can, or subscribe.
Yeah, the Facebook page is kind of, Corey does a great job every week of coming up with some cool stuff to put on there.
Yeah, check the Facebook page. We also have an Instagram page. It's He Saw, She Saw podcast. And it's not as good as the Facebook page because it doesn't let me do what I want to do. The Facebook page kind of lets me do what I want to do, but it's there if you would like to visit it.
Yeah.
So check that out. And yes, please definitely like us on whatever podcasting platform you listen to so that we are more seen
and
more present.
Exactly.
So
and thank you for listening. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Happy birthday, Corey.
Thank you. Happy birthday.